Humanity in Healthcare is seeing and being seen, and hearing and being heard, and healing and being healed.
More human healthcare means I know what matters to my patients, not just what's the matter with them.
And more human healthcare means extending kindness, compassion and fair treatment, regardless of my faith, nationality and race. Remembering that underneath it all, we're all human.
More human healthcare means remembering everyone involved is human.
As staff, it would mean the umbrella of safety and compassion is extended to me. As a patient, it would mean not to be unfavorably cared for because of who I am.
More human healthcare means a warm and listening face, an attitude of respect, and an honest and open response.
Humanized healthcare for me is more than just dressing my wounds. It's holding my hand, looking into my eyes, asking how I feel, it's checking that I'm not scared, treating me like a human being.
So welcome to the Humanizing Health podcast series from the Point of Care Foundation. I'm Aggie Rice, and I'm the Schwartz Community Lead at the Point of Care Foundation. And today I'd like to welcome Carl Betts, Quality Improvement Lead, paramedic, father of two, and wood turner. Carl, you're very welcome. Hi.
Good morning.
So making healthcare more human, both for people working to deliver care and for the people they care for, is the mission of the Point of Care Foundation. To do that in this series, we want to share some of the reality of working in healthcare from different perspectives across the NHS and social care. These voices from the point of care are an important counterbalance to some of the rhetoric that is flying around the press, with healthcare staff represented as heroes and sometimes villains, when in reality we are all just humans who have good and bad days. We think it's important to share some of the joy of work in health and care, the bits that get you up in the morning, whether they're the colleagues, the moving tributes, or simply the patients and the impact that you have on their lives. But it is also important to understand some of the realities of working in healthcare and the toll that it takes, as well as the really good bits that mean you keep on going. So, hi Carl, thank you so much for being here. Nice to see you on this Monday morning. Could you tell me a little bit more about your role at the Yorkshire Ambulance Service? What a typical day or week is like, if of course there is such a thing?
So currently I'm a quality improvement lead here at Yorkshire Ambulance Service in a seconded position from my substantive role as a rapid response vehicle paramedic in South Yorkshire.
Yeah, I really liked when we were talking earlier that you talked about the one of the joys of your role at the moment is kind of being able to have this real kind of broad view of things that are happening across the organisation whilst also having these really meaningful interactions with people on a very kind of human and day-to-day level, and the kind of combination of those two visions, I suppose, can really give some fulfillment to the role.
Yeah, I think it's important never to forget where you're from. My background, my whole being in the ambulance service is a paramedic. That is what I am in this service being. And it, sometimes I think you can forget that, when in fact actually forgetting your roots means you're definitely a way off the mark. Whereas if you can keep your roots and you can keep chatting to your colleagues and you can still do operational shifts occasionally, yes, it's difficult because we've got full diaries, but it's important to do operational shifts because that's where you get the actual feeling. That's where you get the knowledge. That's where you gain a lot of information about what is actually going on, because not only are you seeing it firsthand, you're hearing it firsthand, and actually being embedded is critical, but also not forgetting who you are and what you came from. It can be quite easy to get removed very quickly when you leave an area of operation. But who knows? Time will tell.
I was so struck with these reflections that you've had about the open and transparent culture at the Yorkshire Ambulance Service and how important that feels, especially in the work that you're doing, but in general for staff too. And I was just interested to hear a bit more about what you think that takes, or what that really feels like.
In terms of an open and transparent service, for me, the whole basis of any discussion like this is around the fact that we're dealing with people. And we're dealing with human beings who've got a ton of stuff going on outside of work, a ton of stuff going on inside of work. and are probably doing their absolute damnedest to do quite well. However, we are human beings and things do go wrong sometimes. And when things do go wrong, we're in an organisation, in Yorkshire Ambulance Service, where we're massively changing our way of looking at things when things go wrong, in terms of it's now all about education, which is how it should be. You know, the second victim methodology is a huge thing around sort of clinical incidents and things. And with things like this, I don't think sometimes you can understand it unless you've been in it. And I think it's one of them sort of interesting things that people may well be trying to push methodologies and ideas onto staff, but unless staff and the workforce can see why we're doing it, what we're doing it for, what's the rationale for doing it, it's long gone are the days now where it's just we say do, you do, in a command and control. It was in COVID because we needed command and control. There are times when that has to then change, but in normal real-time world, actually now it's all about you are the specialist in your area. To make a change, what do we need to do? If we make that change, what effect is that going to have on you? Classic one is rotas. Rotas cause absolute merry mayhem with people's work lives as well as people's personal lives. And it's a very close to people's heart discussion. But rotas are something that are necessary within a service. Now, the question is, how do we have a rota that can maximise the benefit for both the trust who's got something to deliver and patients to care for, and the staff to keep them happy, to keep them motivated, and more importantly, to keep them here? Because our retention rates, not just in YAS, retention rates throughout the ambulance sector, pretty shocking, really. And there's a lot of things what need to happen to try and suss that out. And that's where this open culture to be able to have discussions and not be afraid to say, look, this rota is absolutely destroying me. You know, I need to look at it. When I had my two kids, my partner, who's a consultant at one of the local hospitals, she wanted to carry on doing some work. I wanted to carry on doing some work. Because of where we live, our families live 2-3 hours away and they're getting elderly. So coming to see us a lot is hard work. Looking after the kids for full days is quite hard work, especially when they're sort of 3 and 1. So it was just like, okay, well, what we need to do is we need to work part-time, but we need to have a flexible working agreement. Now, if I didn't have that flexible working agreement, there is no way that I could be still really doing the job that I'm doing unless I was on bank, which then knocks you into financial insecurity, which then has a knock-on effect because you're scared to do things, you're scared to book that holiday because of the financial aspects of it. So for me, I've been nothing but supported within the organisation that I work for. And, you know, I'm a massive advocate for we're doing a lot of things right, but I'm also a huge advocate that we've still got a long way to go. And as an organisation, we accept that. And that's why our team is important. And that's why the role that I see is important, because we're a key part of that drive moving forward.
Thank you, Carl. This question kind of feels like it leads quite nicely on from that one. But I've been really struck by all your writing and your reflections on your work and the emotional landscape of your work. And you've written a piece called Normal or Numb. And I just wonder if you could talk a little bit about that here.
So the premise of that piece of work, which I didn't realise how important it was until I finished it, to be honest. I'll give you the background of the incident, but I went to an incident one winter's night. It was pretty cold, pretty grim Sheffield night. Pretty grim job, really. So a person who, when we'd got to the scene, went into the house is freezing cold, bit unkempt, bit messy. But that in itself isn't a shock in our job. We see a whole plethora of properties. But I was guided up to the attic, where there was a chap who was clearly deceased at that point, and he died of some form of drug overdose. There was obvious evidence that had happened. There was, you know, there was a tourniquet around this chap's limb. So yeah, it was very evident. Yep, okay, this chap's passed away. Went through the protocol, phoned the police. Yep, we need the police. We've got an unexpected death. They came, blah, blah. And you go through the process and very nonchalant about it. Didn't really affect me in the slightest. Actually, really easy job. it's just a case of doing the paperwork, doing the process, no difficulties. I haven't even had to open my bag, so I've got no restocking to do. Just a very simple, well, that'll do, just before break. So we're all good. My mate turned up because they sent two of us on two cars to this incident. And while we were dealing with this job and waiting for the police, I just said to my mate, what are we having for dinner? Because he was on the same shift pattern as me, so we were going to be stood down for dinner at the same time. And we agreed, yep, we'll have a Chinese. I went outside, ordered the Chinese. No worries. Finished the job, said ta-da to the police, got in the cars. He drove to the Chinese, picked the Chinese up, got back to station, ate far too much of our Chinese takeaway. But then the rest of the evening, and then a few days after, I was just suddenly struck about the fact that, to me, seeing a deceased person who's died of some form of drug overdose with drug paraphernalia all over the place is just completely normal. It didn't affect me on any emotional level at all, like not a thing, which some people who listen to this might think, well, you're a heartless so-and-so, aren't you? When actually, I'm not. But with this job, I suddenly worked out that actually we normalize things, that if I had that discussion about the things that I've seen and the things that I've done and the things that I've been involved with to somebody who is not within the ambulance sector or the emergency medicine sector or other healthcare sectors, they would look at me like there's something completely wrong in the fact that how can you see things like that and just talk about them the way you talk about them, and more importantly, sometimes make a joke about them, because we do with our humour. And that's what got me thinking, actually, I wonder what other people think as well. And yes, surveys are important. Yes, you know, we need to get information. Yes, but actually, sometimes what you need is somebody to write their thoughts down in a non-academic way, just in a personal way, with your name on it. So it comes from a person, not from an anonymous object that a computer could have bashed it out. And it took me about 6 months to write this. And actually, it was one of the most enjoyable things I've ever written about. And the reason why it was so enjoyable was because whenever I sent it to somebody to say, can you just have a read through this? I've made some changes, see what you think. The comments that I were getting back weren't necessarily comments about, well, I think you should change this and I think you should change that. The comments were, I've thought about that a lot and never wanted to talk about it. And as soon as some people say that to you, you think, right, we're onto something here, because this has now opened a channel of communication. And then when I sort of asked to get it published and the College of Paramedics published it and other people have published it on different forums and this, that and the other, what I found was actually there is this burning desire to question, am I numb or not? Or am I just normal? But people don't question it. People internally question it. But when you internally question things, you can sometimes go down an avenue that you don't want to go down, you know, because you're the world's hardest critic. But when you chat to a mate in the mess room and someone says, look, I've just read your thing, and can I just say thank you? Because I've been worried about this for a long time. It's really quite profound. And it's totally changed my way of thinking about how I write things, in the fact that, yes, it may be me writing about my opinion, but actually by writing about your opinion, that can evoke a discussion. And by evoking a discussion, you might not have the same opinions, but you're going to have them challenges and you're going to have them chats. And actually, that's what we don't do enough of. We don't just have a chat about stuff. And this piece that I wrote actually did open that channel of communication throughout the most random different ways. And it's got me in doing podcasts because people wanted to do podcasts on it. And it's been really, really interesting. But then when you sort of look back, all I've done is asked a question of myself. And actually, having written it and having done a few very interesting incidents since then, nah, I'm perfectly normal in this line of work. I am numb to certain things. I think it's healthy, because if you take everything on board from jobs, you know, you are going to end up in a bit of a tangle. And I think I've got myself in a healthy position. But when I do need to have that emotional, or not need, but when I have that emotional pang, you know, if I'm dealing with a very poorly kid, or I'm dealing with a kid that's died through whatever reason. You know, I've got kids, I've got a baby, it's home. Now, if it didn't hit home with that, then I would be massively questioning myself. But the emotional response I've had when I've dealt with incidents that hit emotive buttons, I've actually got one. So for me, I think I'm quite healthy with it. But from writing this, it's now on my agenda. It's now on my mind because I then question, right, I didn't feel anything on that instant. Should I have? And it just allows me to question it.
Wow. Thank you, Carl. I was so struck when you were talking about, you know, this power of storytelling and having the permission, but feeling enabled for, you know, for people to be able to talk about this, and the kind of ripple effects of one person telling their story has such a huge impact, doesn't it?
I imagine it's just like a dance floor, isn't it? Is it? You know, it might be a shocking analogy to use, but people don't dance until one person gets up and dance. And then once one person gets up and dance, everyone's up. Same thing. Someone makes a statement, quite brave. It was quite a brave thing for me to do, you know, wear my heart on my sleeve, you know, and fly this flag. But actually, once one person does it, like you say, the ripple effect's massive. And I'm a big believer in if you are prepared to wear your heart on your sleeve, then a lot of people can benefit from it. They might not agree with what you're saying, but they can benefit from the discussions that you have. And I'm very much an open person when it comes to stuff like this. I'll have a conversation with anybody about stuff. I'm really not fazed by it. I don't know whether that's because I'm more comfortable in my own skin with that sort of thing. I wish more of us were like myself, because I think it would be a much healthier place, but we can't all be, you know, that open. But I think the key thing is gently trying to tease that openness out of the people who aren't necessarily as open as I am.
It's kind of like a practice, isn't it? The more that there's someone enabling it, and then people get this kind of chance to practice it, it becomes more and more comfortable, doesn't it? And again, it's this part of this kind of conversation about culture, isn't it? Being openly vulnerable in health and social care is quite countercultural still, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it is like that first step on the dance floor. That bit does feel quite big and scary, because you're working against something that's almost been trying to get everyone to do the opposite.
I think when you talk about that, Aggie, is it a perception that we perceive an organisation isn't safe to do that? And I think that's a very differing point to an actual organisation being, you know, if I'm thinking about things myself and I'm, you know, internally analysing stuff, I'm going to go down the worst case scenario. If I say this, I could get myself into a lot of bother, or I could get myself into a lot of, well, if you think like that, the culture that you work in doesn't feel safe. But I feel that I am more than able to say things and actually it be listened to. And I'm safe to say the things that I'd like to say, because I think a lot of the things that I say aren't just me. It's just me saying it, but actually is potentially backed up by a load of people who were sat in the crew room 20 metres to my right hand side. And I think that's the whole thing about cultural safety. Do you feel safe to be able to talk about it? And I actually think in many situations we should feel safe, but we tell our mind that we're not safe. And I think that's totally countercultural. And I think it's a really important thing that we need to start focusing on, or organisations need to be focusing on, to say, please, you are completely safe to be open and honest about the things you want to talk about.
So, next question. If you could give one message to the general public about the NHS just now, what would it be?
At the NHS as a whole, or the ambulance sector?
Well, whatever you feel you'd rather answer.
I suppose they're both linking to each other in the fact that we're doing our best. Yeah, times are hard. The NHS has been, will be close to breaking on more than one occasion, and it's going to happen again in the future. But we always get through it as an organisation, as a workforce, as a skill set. People always step up to do everything they can to get an organisation through the situations that we find ourselves in, but that takes its toll. Staff are tired, clinicians are tired, admin staff are all tired, everybody is just tired, and we're feeling the brunt of it. But when we turn up to your house, we're the professionals that we are, but we're also the human beings as well. And people are knackered, people are worn out, people have had a hell of a 2 years and can't actually see much respite coming. The whole system is just, if I was going to put it a word in, it's just tired. Equipment's tired, people are tired, hospitals are tired. So just be patient with us, because everybody's doing their best.
Thank you, Carl. And you've also been up all night with a one-year-old too. So all of that in one.
And these are the things that, you know, when you come to work, you put your professional hat on. So if I was on ops today, I've been up basically all night with my one-year-old who's full of cold, who's basically been doing star jumps in the bed, as one-year-olds do, kicking, breathing on your face, intermittent screaming. But then you come to work and I might be dealing with if I'm on ops, I might be dealing with a cardiac arrest at 7:30 in the morning. And then you're running on adrenaline. But then after that, you've got another job. And then after that, you've got another job. And then you get home on a night and you've still got your home life to deal with, in the fact that your baby might not sleep again tonight. We have to be the absolute professional. But there's other things affecting how I behave, how I work, that people can't see. And people don't need to be privy to, but we do have other lives. And the other lives are just as tiring, if not more tiring, than my professional life. And they all interlink, they all cross over. And if you're having a really bad day, you're having bad relationship problems, you're not quite on form, and then you get a complaint, it just compounds everything, doesn't it? And while everything's rosy, while everything's perfect, everything's great, but invariably, when things start going slightly belly up, it's never just one thing. It's then becomes an accumulation effect. And we've just got to be aware that workforces are tired. Workforces have got a lot going on in their home lives, especially with the pandemic and everything. People not being on holiday, they've not had their release, they've not had their break, not had their normal social interactions. All they've done is come to work, fight like hell to keep their head above the water at work, and then go home to a very different home that they've not really had any practice in, because none of us have ever dealt with stuff like this before. So yes, we're currently through the latest wave of COVID, but who knows what's around the corner. There'll be something else around the corner. Don't know what it is, but there'll definitely be something. And hopefully we've got a bit of resilience. We've got a bit of tried and tested management of this sort of stuff now. So hopefully everybody will be better prepared for it. But I'm just conscious of the fact that people are tired and there's no sign of getting any rest.
Thank you, Carl. And just finally, if you could ask the Secretary of State for one wish, what would it be?
I would say that please acknowledge the fact that through years and years and years, the NHS has been mismanaged through chronic underfunding, chronic not being having a vision of the curve of where we're on here. Nothing that there's, I can't think of any part of the health service, and bear with me because I am just I'm just a paramedic by background, so I don't have a huge academic overview of the entire service. But what I see is every service is stretched because every service has never been maintained with the curve of the population and the curve of the current illnesses that we find in the country. And then you chuck COVID in as a spanner, and that's just absolutely thrown everything off the mark. So we were already way behind before COVID even started, and then you lob COVID in. Well, talk about being way behind. I mean, we're not even at the starting line with a lot of the improvement works that we need to do. And actually, a lot of that stuff should have been done 15 years ago, you know, with the vision of, right, what is going to happen, future planning, long-term planning. But we just seem to be firefighting, next firefight, next firefight, next firefight, and hoping we get through it. And like I say, we always do, but that's got a detriment. And the detriment is to us, people doing the job, the doctors in the operating theatre, the GPs out in practice, the mental health services that are absolutely buckling at the knees because they just can't keep up. The social services with an ageing population that is absolutely crippled, who are desperate to do the right thing and can't do the right thing because there's not enough of them. So the people who suffer are the people who need it. And they're some of the people who need it most in society. And just to acknowledge the fact that actually we haven't done this right. You know, it would be quite nice, but sadly that doesn't happen. And I know that might not be a nice thing for people to hear or want to hear or agree with me or have, you know, but that's my personal thought on it.
Thank you so much, Carl. I feel so grateful and so privileged to have had this time talking to you, particularly given what we've been talking about and the pressures of time and tiredness there. So I'm very grateful for you for spending this morning, this Monday morning with me. Is there anything else that you want to say before we start to draw to a close?
No, just thank you for giving the opportunity to have a natter, really. It's been very nice and pleasant. I've had a cup of tea, had a chat, all good.
It does feel like a really nice way to start the week, actually, just having a chat with you. So thank you for spending your morning with me and talking through these bits. It does feel like a real privilege to get the insights that you have and to hear them. If you want to find out more about the Point of Care Foundation and our mission to humanise healthcare, do visit us at pointofcarefoundation.org.uk or at Point of Care Foundation on Twitter. Carl, do you want to tell us your Twitter account so we can get that in too?
Again, it's at Carl Betts with capital C and capital B underscore YASQI, and YASQI is all capitals. Send us a message, or if you want to send me an email, if you want to have a chat, it's carl.betts@nhs.net. Happy to chat to anybody. It's always interesting to see where these discussions go, so get in contact.
Brilliant. Thank you, Carl. And thank you for listening to this podcast. I hope you like what you heard, and do look out for our next episode on humanising healthcare. Until then, this is me, Aggie Rice, saying goodbye.